honorable members, I think we are all ready to proceed to the final witness to appear before the committee for today. And that witness is Mr. Sisi. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, sir. And Mr. Sisi is the former Group Executive Risk and Governance. And the proceedings are the same. Can I just remind members to ensure that your mobile units are off, and that the proceedings will be very much the same as they were since we started in terms of how we go about doing it. Having said that, Mr. Sisi, please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a House or a committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Sir, I've been informed that you have agreed to take the oath, and I would therefore ask you to repeat after me with your mic on, sir, once you put it on. You know how to put on the mic? Just put it on, yes? Okay. I swear by Almighty God.
I swear by Almighty God.
That the evidence I shall give.
That the evidence I shall give.
Will be the truth.
Will be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Please say, so help me God. Raise your right hand.
So help me God.
Thank you very much, sir. It is 10 to 2, Advocate Venara. Can we, if it is at all possible, ask you to have concluded your part of the business by 2:30, and thereafter we will open it up to members as per usual, 5 minutes per member. Over to you, Advocate.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Tracy, for the record, can you please state your full particulars, your name, surname?
Yes, my name is Itani Tracy.
You had given to me a document entitled Our Beloved Public Service Broadcaster in the form of a presentation. This is the document.
That's correct, sir.
That document is accompanied by a document entitled Context. Do you have the document?
Yes, I do have a document. That's not my document, however.
Okay.
Yes.
Can you tell the committee what are your academic qualifications and what was your position at the SABC?
Thank you. I have a BCom accounting, as well as honors in management accounting. My last position at the SABC was Group Executive of Risk and Governance.
You at some point had occupied the position of Group Executive Risk and Governance.
That's correct.
We will deal with it later as to how you became GM Risk. Can you outline to the committee your role as Group Executive Risk and Governance, what it entailed?
Yes, sir. As a start, we all know that the public entities or the SABC is required by the Public Finance Management Act, Section 51(1)(a), Roman Figure 1, that requires that the SABC board, being the accounting authority, must ensure that the SABC has and maintains a system of effective, efficient, and transparent financial, risk management, and internal controls. So there's three things here that they need to ensure that they're effective, efficient, and transparent. In this case, we are dealing with the middle one, which is the risk management part of it. Right. That is primarily. That is read again with the National Treasury Regulation 27.2.1, which requires the SABC board to facilitate a risk assessment to determine the material risks. Some will call them strategic, some will call them key, to which the entity may be exposed to, and evaluate the strategies to manage those risks. There's two compliance matters that are out there that the board is required to comply with. However, primarily, risk management is there within an organization or within the SABC really to ensure that the objectives as they are set out, whether in the corporate plan or any other strategic document, are achieved. That's the primary reason why risk management within an organization exists. Right. Just now to go into my role. My role as a group executive of risk management and governance is as follows. I'm the custodian of what we call the instruments of risk and governance, being one, the risk management policy, two, the risk management framework, three, whistleblowing policy, four, fraud and corruption policy and strategy, and lastly, integrated internal control framework, as well as the operational governance framework. We'll come to that. So my role in that is that I facilitate the risk management processes and ensuring that the risk management framework is implemented throughout the organization. So mine is to facilitate. And why is that? It's because I do not own, or I am not responsible for, in this case, for example, television. I am not an executive of television, therefore I don't own a risk in that environment. I cannot therefore manage it. However, it is my job to facilitate the processes within television division to make sure that all the risks that they're exposed to are identified, assessed, managed, or controlled. That would be the process. Well, of course, in between that, there are many other things that I need to do as the group executive of risk. From the governance point of view, we called it operational governance in order to avoid stepping in the board's toes, because the board's governance, the custodian of the board governance is that of the company secretary and the board itself. So my role was really operational governance, which means it's from a lower level of any transaction within the organization up until group executive committee. That's where my role ends in as far as governance is concerned. However, these two governances are not exclusive. They've got a point of intersection, which is EXCO. That's where perhaps the discussion today will focus on, because when they come from here to there, they need to satisfy some particular requirements for them to be able to go above to board. So that is my role as far as risk and governance is concerned.
In your role as a facilitator, in the identification of risk and the development of relevant risk registers for the institution. How far did you go within the organization in ensuring that there was an institutional risk register that adequately identified risks? And we're talking about institutional risk register.
Right. Indeed, and I'll try and locate the institutionalized risk register to the 3 points that I've mentioned that appears in the PFMA, which is effective, efficient, and transparent. And I think it will have addressed your points, because then when it's transparent, you can see, you can literally see it. When it's efficient, it means it doesn't have to cost millions and millions of rands. Effective, does it do what it's supposed to do? Right. When I rejoined the SABC in 2013, after saving the nation from AFCON, the organization had a qualified statement on the compliance in as far as risk management is concerned. So, and when I left the SABC, I was the group executive of risk and governance. So I felt it can't be. I just left for 12 months and then now we get a qualification. So I had to start from afresh to make sure that indeed that we review the policies as I've mentioned them earlier. Secondly, to facilitate the so-called strategic risk register or risk assessments that were not necessarily limited to that, because we had divisional risk registers which were being done by the junior staff. However, my role was to make sure that the board and the group executive sit and assess the strategic risk on the basis of the strategic objectives of the organization. Right. That we did in 2014. Right. That assessment was conducted and then was approved by, it was a combination of group executive and the board itself. And we came up with 17 strategic risks on the basis of the strategic objectives of the organization.
Can you take us through those,
yes,
some of those risks?
Yes. I will start with the one that I think, of course, all of them are relevant for this discussion, but I think this one is even more relevant than the others. And when I call a risk, normally it is in our framework that we don't call a risk in a negative manner. Negative manner meaning that the risk of dying, we'll call it perhaps the risk of losing your life. We'll try and put it in a nicer way, even though in the description we'll describe it the way it is. Right, I'll start with the risk called board effectiveness. What did that mean? Board effectiveness meant the risk that board may not discharge its fiduciary duties as legislated and regulated and meet its set strategic objectives and shareholder compact. Right. And again, I need to remind the members, the honorable members, that this is the assessment done by both the board and the group executive, facilitated by myself. Right. When we were assessing this risk, the board members, including the executive, says, what would be the causes of this particular risk to materialize? What would cause the board not to discharge its fiduciary duties as legislated and regulated and meet its strategic objectives? Right. The following, amongst others, were those that were mentioned by board members as well as the executives. One, lack of independence and board conflict of interest. Right. I think conflict of interest is quite clear here. Is when you want a contract to be awarded to so-and-so, even though perhaps that organization doesn't, because you've got an interest, a family member who perhaps have some financial interest in the organization. And lack of independence is both ways. It's when members become the proxies of other board members or outside organization not necessarily being there as what they need to discharge their duties as is expected. Two, inadequate attention to strategy and execution. Very, very important. And I suppose when we get somewhere to financial sustainability, that's where the course is. Three, board and executives' unclear demarcation of roles and responsibilities. Indeed, board members thought chairpersons just felt that they can make a decision on the basis that they're chairpersons. They can just approve and sign something, which of course it's known that a board is a board. It's a board. It's not a chairperson. Inadequate knowledge of board responsibilities. And this is what executives and board are saying purely because they've actually experienced this from each other or to each other while they're engaging. Lack of board cohesiveness. The board worked separately while it's called a board. There will be some other approvals that some other members of the board will not know about, and you wonder which board it was that this resolution was made. Lack of appropriate tone set by the board. This indeed, I think, was one of the things that even employees below executives were tend to be worried about. And inadequate knowledge of SABC business, clear. Interference and influence from executive management. Need to explain this a little bit. This is a situation where executives will actually almost make decisions without the consideration of the board. Meaning that as an executive, I'll get to a board meeting and that decision will go without the proper board consideration. Inadequate board support from company secretariat, and I need to state this, and I'm sorry to the late Hope Zinde, the former board member. She raised this matter, inadequate board support from company secretariat. And that in itself was caused by the fact that I mentioned of the cohesiveness is that there's divisions within a board. Therefore, when you are there, you need to check. You need to then choose where you belong. So those who chose the opposite side, unfortunately, they lacked that particular support. And that's what she mentioned on the day, and I could vividly remember at that time. So, what are the causes of this board ineffectiveness? What are these consequences? And the consequences we know, that is why we are here, is board instability, poor corporate governance, ineffective executive committee, inability of the corporation to achieve its strategic objectives, inability to meet shareholder expectations, and loss of credibility. So, to that end, because this had to do with the board of directors' effectiveness, there was nothing that myself or other executives could do to make sure that the board itself as a unit or as a governance institution can be effective itself. Therefore, that's what we said. We said, board, here you are. You have assessed, you part of this assessment, executives are part of this assessment, you go out there and design and develop the strategies to make sure that all of these risks are managed within your area of responsibility, which is board.
Now, was that strategy developed?
Absolutely not. So that's a red cross in that respect.
What was the board's risk appetite in respect of this identified risk?
In all honesty, I would say that there wasn't an appetite to really focus on risk management from board. That's just my reading of it from the interactions I had with them. And I'm talking now, that was in 2014. And then by the time I left in September 2016, there was hardly anything that was developed in order to deal with this particular risk, which is risk number one. Otherwise, if the board is not working, the whole organization really will struggle. Yes, the TV will be on air, at what cost? That was one of the risks out of the 70.
And can we get to the next risk?
Okay.
The second one would be profitability and liquidity. This now we are talking directly to the financial sustainability of the organization. What did this risk mean? It meant that the risk that the SABC may fail to generate profit and the inability to fund its operation from cash generated from operations. So that risk already is encapsulated there. We mentioned some of the other threats that were outside the impending alcohol ban and the food labeling, costs involved in that, the compromised marketing messages that would have had an issue. However, the root causes there, as we identified them at the time, were that the absence, the continuous absence of financial strategy. One. Two, the misalignment of a corporate strategy and resource allocation, which is budgeting. We budget to want to show profit, however, what we say on the strategy here have got no meeting point. So budget is a budget, strategy is a strategy. The banning of alcohol advertising, well, that's a given. SABC reputation and credibility, yes, we all know. Immediately when the SABC is negatively reported on, that's a good excuse for people not to pay television license. And not only that, the advertisers vote with their monies, with their clients' money. They simply will just go somewhere else. TV schedule disruptions, which was more an operational matter, however, it needed to be dealt with.
Sorry, Mr. Cis. See, you have a document in front of you. You seem to be reading from it.
Yes.
Is that the strategic register of the institution?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. We would ask, with your permission, to submit it to the committee.
No problem at all.
Once we're done.
Yes.
But can we get to the third?
The third one.
Race strategy.
The third one is the long-term strategy. The risk that the SABC Group Exco is not meeting the set strategic objectives and expectations of the board and other stakeholders. The root causes in this case, which were identified, were that lack of leadership, competency, and capacity. High and frequent turnover for executives without planned succession. Ineffective communications amongst board and executive management, and I think those are the kind of things we spoke about as well in the board effectiveness. The lack of appropriate tone set by board. And monolithic leadership. This is what former board member Mr. Vusema Vuso said. I still haven't found the dictionary to explain what monolithic is. But anyway, I suspect that it's haphazard. It's a skelter.
Okay. Right. We have a lot to say, but unfortunately we do not have the luxury of time.
Right.
What strategies then were put in place in response to mitigate some of these risks materializing?
In as far as a lot, largely from the long-term strategy, as I say to you today, the organization does not have. I've been out of the organization probably, two and a half months. It doesn't have long-term strategy. It works on a corporate plan approach. And I've raised this at some point, I think it was in 2014, to the executive directly, as an executive of risk and governance that this thing is worrying me, that we are just continuing as if all is well without a long-term strategy.
Okay, let's look at the profitability and liquidity.
Sure.
What strategies were put in place to respond to that?
Well, in that sense, well, there were some initiatives from the sales part of the business in as far as the classical revenue is concerned, in as far as pricing, the collection as well, you know, to shorten the debtors' days, the days in which you collect your cash. However, that in itself cannot be enough because the driver of advertising revenue is not necessarily a sales strategy, however, is the content on air. And if the content is not attractive enough and you don't have eyeballs on the screen, it's pointless. What are you going to sell? Yes, there were strategies, however, they were not good enough to sustain the organization in that where the strategy was supposed to have been in terms of content and television and radio, they were lacking in that respect, in my view.
It's well and good to have all these strategies. I want us now that you had identified the risks, there had to be strategies put in place. What is it from your position that you've identified as material evidence demonstrating these risks now occurring within the institution?
That actually happened in, and I think continuously, depending on the forum. I was an invitee in the risk committee of board, of course, and I was a member of the group executive committee. So my other role being to provide assurance, I will always go into the finances and check indeed if the risk profitability and liquidity, for instance, is being managed adequately so that we will be able to then achieve the objectives as they were set.
So what were your findings?
My findings were very clear, and that indeed the organization is going to be loss-making for the foreseeable future, no doubt about it. It was just clear for me when I raised it in 2014. And of course it happened. For the past two financial years, it has been loss-making, and it will continue to do so until such time that a bunch of many of these cancers that are spread within the organizations are really amputated and we start all over again.
What were the causes?
The causes were exactly that. They were not strategy. It is pay as you go. Or let's just go as, you know, as if nothing is changing within our environment. So that was one, lack of that strategy. And of course, the high rate of cost, the costs were increasing, and whereas the revenue is decreasing. And simply because the integrated strategy, long-term strategy didn't exist. And I think there was an argument which I still hold today that indeed that is not true. When I raised this issue, it say, well, but we've got a corporate plan. I said, yes, it is a corporate plan. However, that cannot be a public service broadcaster of that magnitude strategy. It will never be, and I know so because we've done strategies before in this organization. So. There was a lack of understanding of what the strategy would look like or what it should be for the SABC. And unfortunately, I think it's still a view today as we sit here.
Let's move to governance. You've been spending much time on risk.
Correct.
Let's move to governance. And we know the legislative framework, but I want to look specifically at the internal arrangements, the MOI. Can you talk to us about the MOI?
Yes. The MOI was introduced to the Group Executive Committee in one afternoon where we were supposed to consider the revised delegation of authority framework. And I'll quote some of my statements, which almost got me into trouble, to say, what is the basis of this review of this delegation of authority framework? Right, because that, of course, necessitated an answer. The answer was that, oh, it's because we need to align it with the MOI. I said, oh, okay, is there a new MOI? And they said, yes, and I said, but there's no point of us approving the delegation of authority until such time we see that MOI. It didn't come for about 6 months, that MOI. And I made it clear on email and at the meeting that I'm not in a position to approve that particular document. And that document, literally, the delegation of authority I'm referring to, was to take away the authority of board to appoint, discipline, fire executives and give them to the so-called executive directors. As I speak to you today, whether it is in the Companies Act or the Broadcasting Act or PFMA, there's no structure such as executive directors at the SABC. It is referred to in the delegation of authority that they can appoint, fire, and discipline executives. That was problematic for me already. So whilst I was still disagreeing with those that wanted it to be approved, well, I got suspended. So I suppose in my absence that delegation of authority got approved.
You, as in your capacity as group executive risk and governance, served in the executive or EXCO, the executive committee, comprising of other group executives and the executive directors in the form of the CFO, the COO, and the group CEO. Is that correct?
That is indeed correct, yes.
My understanding is that there was some reorganization at some point of EXCO. Can you talk to?
Whilst I was still on ice, whilst I was still suspended, there was a change in structure. That change in structure, which I later learned that it was not approved by board. However, the worrying point is that this parliament was given a corporate plan which includes that particular structure, which was never approved by board. However, that is as it may. That reorganization or that structural change, what it did, it took the internal audit function, the risk and governance function, the compliance function, and was put together and was called governance and assurance. Right, and I'm sitting at home. In this position, there were two executives. There was a chief audit executive for internal audit who somehow left before a contract, and there was myself, a group executive of risk and governance, and there was another, I think there was a junior senior manager for compliance. So when that is combined, I learned, of course, when I came back, that risk and internal audit are no longer members of the group executive committee. So I asked why that was the case, and they said, oh no, the terms of reference has just changed. I said, okay, well, can I have them? Of course, I was denied access to those. And I've learned when I asked for the corporate plan that there's a new structure which I've never seen, but then I had to engage my lawyers to ask the first question as to please give us the resolution for this approval of this particular structure. Secondly, give us the resolution for this exclusions of this particular of these two assurance providers at Group Exco from Exco itself, and that in essence commenced my process of exit. So we had to then mutually agree that we need to part ways. That's where it ended, really.
You indicate that there was a change in the MOI and the executives were now empowered to hire fire other staff members, including other executives. What was the net effect of that decision in terms of the operations of the organization?
Just before you answer, sir, can I just ask you to start wrapping up? We've got 10 minutes left.
I think the net effect is exactly the exodus you see today of executives. It is exactly that. That is why perhaps you see some of us sitting here. It's exactly that particular, that's the impact it had to the, on the organization.
In your role, did you have any interactions with the board?
Yes, I did, to the extent that I was an invitee at risk committee and the audit committee. And of course, when I do the facilitation of risk assessments with the board and the executive committee, of course. It was limited to that, and I think I was one of the invitees in one of the, it was supposed to have been a finance committee in essence, and social and ethics committee, of course, yeah. So to that extent, yes.
In your role, did you pick up any irregularities within the organization that you would have uplifted and brought to the attention of the authorities?
Oh, yes. There were quite a lot, and majority of those will be actually recorded in the transcript in the minutes of either Exco or the committees that I talked about earlier. Yes, there were quite a lot. Some of them, of course, were rectified, and some just continued differently. And some of them I just learned when I wasn't there anymore that indeed they went ahead. Yes, of course there were irregularities that I pointed out. Yeah.
Can you share with the committee some of those?
Without really mentioning names, it's mainly at the. I was the chairperson of the bid adjudication committee as well. So most of this request will come as, we do not want to follow the process, the procurement policies as is prescribed. And that's where some of those will be, the appointment of the service providers, largely, many of them were mentioned in the chairperson's document.
In the terms of reference?
In the terms of reference, sorry, yeah.
Would that include Sekela Tlhabiso?
Sekela Tlhabiso is one of them indeed, yes.
Would it include PricewaterhouseCoopers?
That would be indeed, yes.
Would it include Vision View?
I wasn't there at that time, no.
Okay. Did you raise these things with at Exco, you were then removed from Exco, but did you bring it to the attention of the authorities?
Well, myself as a chairperson actually was meant it was to deal with it right there and then. And I remember one of the, I think it is referred in the terms of reference there as a fixed-term contractor or something. Just don't have the document. I think it's called fixed-term something. In that, I raised the point that there is simply no way that we were going to appoint this particular individual at the, it was at EXCO. And 2 weeks later, that individual was appointed. That individual was then appointed, I mean, but yes, I've raised it, it's recorded then, because I was very upfront on it.
Okay, I've just given you the terms of reference, the letter of the chairperson you're referring to. Can you just look at it to identify what...
what that was being confused? Now, I think it will fall under D, one, let's say, point A... Sorry, no, point D, because it's not separately actually indicated. No, it will be under D in the...
Can you read that?
Oh, sorry, that's... it says human resources related, including governance structures, appointment of executive and termination of services of the affected executives. So it was within that. However, it came through in the Bid Adjudication Committee and we said this cannot be a service provider because it's a human resources matter. And then when it went to group executive, I raised that there's no way, there's simply just no way that we can appoint an individual to come do a job that the head of procurement actually is there to do, who's being paid and is working. So, but after a week or two, that appointment was made.
Because time's against us. Was there any contraventions of policy relating to the recruitment of staff within the organization that you could share?
Without truly having access to the recruitment processes, processes themselves, I truly cannot point out. That's one of them. That's the one I've just mentioned is one of them. However, I'll imagine that I think the HR person would be the best person really in that respect. I suspect so.
No further questions, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Can we then go over to Honorable Van Damme? Your 5 minutes starts now, ma'am.
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Tracy, in terms of the irregularities that you came across, would any of those constitute financial misconduct in terms of the PFMA?
Without necessarily actually remembering all of them, yes, indeed, some will do. I'll imagine some will.
And in terms of the PFMA, in your recollection, what is the sanction for financial misconduct, particularly against an accounting authority?
Well, the accounting authority has got a responsibility, first and foremost, to have, and I'm going to use the discipline really as a singular one response that you can have in a financial irregularity. They have a responsibility to act on those kinds of transactions, no doubt. It's as simple as that.
Okay. Well, in terms of a PFMA, an accounting authority who is guilty of financial misconduct is guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment. Would you say that would be the correct action in this instance?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. And then this document, you said you're not the author of this document. Who's the author of this document?
The one that says context.
Yeah.
No, the one that says context.
No, the our beloved public service.
Is
this you? Okay. Okay, I'm particularly interested on page 2, where you list a whole lot of decisions that were taken by the board post the 5th of October, which would have decisions being taken by the board in its inquiry form. Can you talk me through some of those decisions? A Okay, so the first one you mentioned was a staff... Yeah, page two, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you said post-portfolio committee of communications meeting on the 5th of October, there were events at the SABC that require urgent intervention.
Oh, yeah.
Staff meetings called by Mr. Motsoneng, Mr. Maguma, and Mr. Aguma held on the 6th of October and attended by the chairperson of the board. What happened at that meeting?
Well, in essence there, I was just pointing out some of the things that, in my view, shouldn't necessarily be happening. However, I wasn't at the meeting. I had already left, I think.
I see.
Yes, I was really pointing out things that, in my view, were worrying.
All right.
Yes.
Is that the meeting where Mr. Motsoneng is alleged to have said he's giving 10,000 rand to each staff member of the SABC?
That's what I had, yes. But I was not at the SABC at the time, yeah.
All right. So you wouldn't be able to give me more information about that? You've heard that at the 6th of October meeting,
Mr.
Motsoneng addressed staff and said each one gets, you get 10,000 rand, you get 10,000 rand.
It was a hearsay that I had as well.
Yes.
But I mean,
that would have been decisions when the board is in court.
Correct.
And another one of the decisions taken was the renewal of the Muvango contract for an additional 3 years at 280 million.
Yes.
That would have been a decision the board had taken when it's in court and therefore is an unlawful decision.
It certainly may well be, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Are you done, ma'am? Are you done? No, you don't. I'm just very surprised that you're so disciplined. No. Honorable Khoza, 5 minutes starts now.
No, the only one I'm ready.
Oh,
fine. It's fine, 5 minutes.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I'm on page 4 of your own document. I'm on page 4 of Mr. Faith's document. To me, those are bullets that are loaded. Can you just, for opening our eyes, unpack bullet number 2. Okay, somebody is influencing me about bullet 1. And then also bullet 4. Just those 3.
Right, bullet number 4 is what I've referred to. For instance, my suspension, the delegation of authority required the board to approve my suspension, but however, that was never approved by board. And I raised it, well, of course, when I raised it at the CCMA, then the SABC chickened out and then they called me back to the office. It was actually unlawful and irregular because Saudi is the one who signed it and he had no authority to do so. However, the board was complicit to that because they never hold him to account for that particular action. And I'm talking about myself now specifically to give you an example. That is one. Right? Bullet number 2. And you will see this as well in the management account, in the management letter that was issued by the Auditor General, that some of these decisions made by board were incorrect, which indeed that those decisions, I'm sure they've got a list of those, and I personally had an issue with some of the meetings that or some of the decisions, in as far as the 3 board members were said to have been fired. And I'm saying if it's unlawful for that matter, if you go and make a board decision without considering the quorum with the 3 members of the board, therefore, there is a risk there that some of these decisions are not necessarily valid from that point of view. However, there are those decisions that have been said already by the Auditor General that indeed the board was incorrect. All right? Point number 1. I think this point really in the court has dealt with this point that says you raise this issue, the adverse findings about an individual, and after 2 weeks you appoint them permanently into a position. I mean, it just defies logic. I truly don't know how else to explain that. It's illogical. Let me put it that way. So indeed, those were just pointers, as you correctly pointed out. They were just pointers, really, to show the need for an urgent intervention by this particular institution called Parliament. Thank you.
Honourable Khoza.
Thank you, Chair. Very quickly, sir, could you kindly take us through some of the charges that you were faced with when you were suspended, and ultimately?
Yes. It was the four of us. We were alleged to have leaked a document to Sunday Times. Can't remember what that story said. I think it talked about that. I think CEO and minister have. Okay. Oh, all right. Yes. That was the only thing. Sorry. That was the only thing I got suspended for.
Okay.
And yeah, I stayed for about 14 months. However, the state security agency was invited to come investigate that particular allegations. They issued the report, which of course I was denied access to, which of course cleared us. That's really the beginning and the end of it.
Okay, no, I thought we should just pass through that.
Okay.
Would you accede to the fact that sound internal governance is the foundation of an effective risk management strategy and implementation plan, in your view, and obviously backed by empirical evidence? What are the external factors that impacted on the inability to implement the risk management and governance strategy, since we're the head of that aspect of the company?
Right, and indeed, in the first point, yes, I agree totally. The external factors were really, and I think I've mentioned a little bit of it, that says the tone at the top and in at the board was truly not supportive enough to get risk management provide those results or those fruits that is there for. And I think that was largely a main impediment into the effectiveness of risk management. However, from at a lower level, from the divisional level, risk management, I think it did, to a certain extent, it was a little bit effective at that point. However, from EXCO upwards, it just became another assurance which is actually blocking people to do what they wanted to do.
When did you start at the SAP in your capacity as the GE Risk and Governance?
I started in March 2010 until June 2012, where I left to AFCON as a CFO there, AFCON 2013. And then I came back after a year, in July 2013 until September 2016.
So you left recently?
Well, yeah, I left about 2 months ago, yeah, September.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, September.
No, thank you. Finally, I just want you to clarify the issue around the new MOI and the delegated authority. I just could not get you what was the point there. I want you to understand. I don't want to make assumptions on what you were trying to say.
But,
I'm talking more about what came first. Was it the delegated authority before the new MOI, or was it the MOI before the delegated authority?
Okay. To the executives, what came first was the so-called reviewed delegation of authority framework, because we did not know of the new MOI. So when we asked the question, why are we reviewing this specific clauses in the DOA, then the answer was, is because we want to align it to the revised or to the new MOI, which we did not know as executives. And I'm sure I would imagine, I don't know whether the board knew. So what came first to us was the revised DOA, and then we asked for the MOI, then it came some months later. With those aspects, of course, of a delegation of authority.
Oh, okay. Now, Butcher, can I go on? Because there's something okay. No, I just wanted to know something about the independence of your internal audit. In internal audit unit, in the new structure that you said came to existence, because to me it doesn't make sense. Why would you, cloud the internal audit function with other functions?
Your time is up, but just note that question because you can maybe allude to it somewhere else. Minutes are up.
No, that's fine.
Honourable Killian.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, thanks to Mr. Tsesi. Just first of all, do you think that the MOI and the delegation of authority framework, which had to be changed, amounted to effectively a takeover by specific people to install them in critical decision-making positions? And through that process, you have received some sort of serious, resistance when you raised concerns with regards to proper corporate management and governance. Would you please just elaborate on that matter?
I definitely will agree with you because the Group Executive Committee in the old articles and memorandum of our association of the SABC was referred to as the committee of board. It was the committee of board where actually members will have to discuss and independently discuss matters. However, and for that reason, they made it possible by actually making sure that the appointing authority of these executives who sit in this group EXCO is board, so that there can be an honest discussion in this meeting. We can raise as much issues as possible. However, when that happens, when you change that and say, well, we've got something called executive directors, now you need not disagree with them. Because what happens is they can fire you any day, if and when they want. So it made the grass greener for that to really flourish, I must say. Yes, agreed.
Then I would like to refer you to page 2, the last, very last bullet. You are referring to the SABC being a national key point and therefore subject to the National Key Point Act, and you said that the appointment of certain people without going through a vetting process could amount to an internal hostile takeover. Could you please elaborate on that matter, and could you please make reference to specific individuals who did not go through the vetting process?
Yes, indeed. Again, another role of mine. I was the National Key Point owner of the SABC. In my role as a group executive of risk and governance. It is a requirement in the MIS document, which is the minimum information security standard, that key employees, in this case SABC executives, are key employees. They will need to go through the vetting. Well, unfortunately for me to be appointed a national key point owner, by the National Police Commissioner, I needed to be vetted first, which I went through. However, when I brought the State Security Agency department that used to do that to explain to EXCO what needed to be done for all of these executives, we all agreed that this executive needs to be vetted. But that never happened. So individually, people really almost resisted it. So I can tell you now, as we speak today, there is no, up until when I was there in September, there is no executive who's actually vetted at the SABC. And executive, I mean group executive members, yeah.
So the senior management of the SABC currently has not been vetted.
No.
It is in, it's therefore non-compliance with the Act.
It is indeed non-compliance with the MIS.
Okay. Secondly, you referred to the irregular removal of board members.
Yeah.
Did you raise that anywhere? Did you list that as a risk, or did you not go through that exercise post the members? And it's rather ironic because with such a removal now, the board has actually, in fact, cut its own tail because it cannot operate at present. It's not, it's non-core rate.
Yeah.
Can you please elaborate on that, please?
In all honesty, I think that was really a discussion at my level and probably maybe my colleagues rather than to the board, because that is now where I referred to as a board governance. And even above board, because board doesn't appoint board members. It's way above even the board governance, the parliamentary governance in itself, in my view. So, for me, it was just shocking, really. And it worried me that of the consequences that will have on the organization, which, of course, that will raise amongst ourselves. But I never raised it with the board itself, no.
Unfortunately, Mr. Chauke, it's your turn. I've always said to members, please don't leave your questions. It's to you, but Mr. Chauke, you've got
questions. No, thank you very much, Chair. Briefly, maybe can you share with us the last day arrangement when you part ways with SAPC? What was the arrangement? And is there anything that you have entered confidential that you may not disclose or may not speak or you may not say anything? Or you may not expose the reason why you're taken out?
No, I think the reason is exactly that when I came back, the position, and I think Honorable Khoza raised the issue to say when that rearrangement of the structure came, when I came back, there was a new structure, which that new structure included my position, and I asked Acting CEO James, I said, well, and of course I knew by then already, so is there a new person in this new position that has been created? He says, yes, it's Teresa Heldenes. And I was shocked to see on TV that she's been referred to as a company secretariat. So in essence, then it meant, well, they needed to do good to my contract. It was as simple as that, Honorable Chauke.
The second thing, obvious. Risk worked close with the Internal Audit Committee. I'll take it. Now, the Auditor General, you become the first line of defense in the corporation. The Auditor General raises a number of things that either risk will have identified or risk will have, in fact, helped to deal with issues raised by the Auditor General on the plan to, that will then deal with the findings. It took SABC till today as we speak. They are sitting at the regular expenditure of 1.5 billion. What is your take on that? And what could have been the cause, in fact, to this extent?
My view is, and I think I try to put it in under the subheading there, that it is my view that there has been a systematic destruction of the governance within the organization. It's a really an effort to really destroy those assurance and governance structures so that all of these things that you see in the and among and many others that don't appear in the Auditor General, of course, then can occur or they do occur. So that is the main reason. And you raised the issue that I need to maybe to respond to Honorable Khoza as well, that to say, the first and second line of defense, they need to be there. If you lump them together and put them somewhere else where you will be able to say things that people want to hear, then you may as well not have them. So that is the issue as well, because the battle has always been there. Internal audit risk will raise these issues that people feel uncomfortable about. And to avoid to hear things that we don't want to hear, what do? We bundle them together and make them insignificant somewhere in the corner there. So, indeed, what we saw as an in the Auditor General's report, I'm very sure that that number is going to increase, no doubt about it.
With the last point, the current situation, coming back to the vetting process, and I want you to tell me in your opinion, well, if people are not vetted, what does it mean, and what is the danger of that? Therefore, link that with the current problems that the SABC is faced with. And lastly, obviously, it's the your report becomes the most critical report, in fact, that assesses the organization, which gets presented to the board. Even the shareholder has access to your report. Can you maybe confirm or tell us if at any point the shareholder has or has a side of your report? And when I mean the shareholder, now I'm talking of the Minister of Communication, or that report, has it ever find way in Parliament, where it was presented in the Committee of Parliament?
Let me start with the last one. I
don't have too much time.
Okay. I doubt if it has been, honestly speaking, I doubt it has been to the Minister or to Parliament. I doubt it. I speak here under correction because it may well have been while I wasn't there, but not when I was there, no. So then the other point you raised about what are those risks when people aren't necessarily vetted, it's a straightforward issue of security in this case. And I'll give, by way of an example, really, it is you've got somebody who, for whatever reason, has got some other, allegiances that the SSA doesn't know about and we don't know about it at the SABC. And that person goes, because that person, I'm a senior person at the SABC, I go into the studio and I say, the country is taken over by me. I am who and who and who and so and so. We know that that's not necessarily true. However, we can imagine what the embarrassment would be for the country. So it is as simple as that. However, the consequences are devastating. So I'm just giving you the extreme kind of the consequence of the. You need to understand and know who are the people you're entrusting this national asset with. That's really the.
I think the point is made, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Honourable Masango.
Sir, thank you, sir. Who did you succeed in the position of general manager?
Sorry, general manager.
Yeah, your risk and governance thing.
Ironically, I started the function at the SABC and I left to join AFCON. I came back. The position was not filled, so I came back to it. So it has always been myself. Almost, yeah.
Who discovered that Mswening didn't have a matric certificate?
I think it was an investigation that was done some time ago. I was still in news then. I'm not too sure exactly who did, though. I'm not sure.
Who generates the risk policy for the board?
It is my role as a risk and governance executive. I develop them, and depending on the environment and the change in the industries, I then review it almost every year, and then I take it to board for approval, which we do annually because of the kind of nature of our business. And I say our as if I still work there, though. But
yes,
but yeah.
That's not. It's what you have raised is there's something that is strange to me, that you've got two sets of risk policies, so to speak, one for the board and one for everyone. What happens if the two do not marry as a head of risk?
Okay. We've got one policy and one framework for the whole organization. However, what we have is the registers are separated. We've got those that we call operational risk registers and the one that is strategic, which deals really with the strategic objectives of the organization. So television will have its own risk register, which then, of course, will feed up there. Yes. But the policy is one.
you raise the issue of clearing of demarcations and responsibilities. Now, you have a person who possibly is your junior sitting in the board. How do you explain that as a risk manager? First of all, did you pick it up? But what is the response in this regard?
Yeah, and I, it really speaks to exactly the points I was making about you know, executives imposing onto the board, and to an extent that some other things can go if it is that individual, you're right, who's junior, who then sit at board. And for me, it just goes to show a board that is ineffective.
But what I would expect of you as the general manager is to raise that matter as a query or an indicator to the board that, board, this is not in line with our whatever things that you remember, your 17 risk areas,
okay.
But this one falls into your first risk, one of the 11 things that you had identified.
Correct.
Which the board had accepted, remember?
Yes. No, the point you make, yes, is correct. We will do that through the risk committee of board, no doubt. That will do. When we pick up many of these things, we call them emerging risks. We'll pick them up and then we'll raise them with the risk committee. But the fact that I am not a board member and I don't attend the board, the expectation is that the risk committee chairperson must have then a report from the discussion that happened at the risk committee to then raise that at board. That's really the expectation, yes.
Internal and external risks, what are the things that you had picked up as external risks to SABC?
Competition. Competition has indeed increased tremendously since I started in 2003. That's one. And I think the delay in DTT implementation is as well affecting, will affect the SABC, no doubt about it. And the increasing cost of sports rights, which at some point it will push the SABC out of really sports of national interest. And the content is growing, and, you know, there is a fair chunk of foreign content that we do, and unfortunately we've got no control over how the dollar does against the rand. So yes, the foreign exchange now and then do affect us, even though we take hedge, we hedge. So by and large, yeah, is the ever-increasing cost of content.
Thank you,
thank
sir.
You.
Thanks. Thank you. Honorable Bukwena.
Thank you, Chair. Am I correct in assuming that your role as risk manager is a legal appointment, that it has legal implications and that you can do investigations and so on and so forth?
No, we didn't at all. That is conducted or done by the internal audit function. Yes. And then we've got a legal department which was separate from risk management.
So in the case of identifying a risk that has legal implications, what then is your recourse?
We identify all the risks, and then the implications may well be financial. It may, and financial in the sense that there may well be fines, which is the legal, there may be legal cost in if we have to go to court. So we cover all of them,
okay.
Including the legal implications, yes.
Okay.
We do that.
All right. Is it your recommendation to this committee that the MOI, as it stands now, should be investigated and perhaps reviewed or withdrawn?
Absolutely, no doubt.
And then the MOI itself, what is the prognosis of the fact that I think there's an agreement that there's something illegal about it, that it's not in tandem with the Broadcast Act, and therefore it shouldn't really have been done. But what is the prognosis of it, and what are the legal implications going forward? Can people be charged for it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, not being a lawyer myself, I think what it has brought in itself, though it's not necessarily directly, it has brought all sorts of questions because, I mean, I've read in one of the management letters from the internal audit, I mean, from the Auditor General, that says the latest delegation of authority framework was actually approved without the quorum, which therefore means they then reverted to the old one. And decisions were therefore made on the basis of the ones that, and I'm sure that the one that they, as the SABC, thought they've approved. And I'm saying, I don't know how many of those decisions that would need to be reviewed. So it's exactly the same in that instance that says, well, was this MOI regularly approved or lawfully approved?
Right. Okay.
And then people will then, of course, take legal actions if and they deem fit, yeah.
Okay. Are you aware if the MOI was presented to Parliament? Yes or no?
No, I'm not aware, no.
Okay. On page 4, bullet point 7, you say the company secretary was allowed to direct affairs of the corporation without oversight by issuing unlawful, irregular resolutions. And then you mentioned that Motsweneng issue, and then you say where she benefited. Who is the company secretary, and how did she benefit?
Well, in this instance, I think at this matter, I mean, this committee has dealt with, I know they've asked former board member Mavuso about the approval of that bonus, which already has been confirmed that he didn't know about it and it was a bonus. And I've raised the issue earlier about the clubbing of these...
Sorry, my time is going to... I need to know the name of the person and how she benefited.
Oh, who's the company secretary?
The company secretary,
I'm told, is Teresa, but I know her to be a new group executive of governance and assurance now.
Okay.
So I know she was a company secretary, but I'm told she's still a company secretary.
And how did she benefit?
Well, she's now in the new position, and I didn't see that position being advertised.
Okay, last point. Sorry, I need to rush because my chairperson is not kind. on page 7, I think. No, on page 8. Sorry.
Okay.
On page 8. Bullet point 4.
Okay.
Withdraw court application for the review of public protector report by the SABC. Can you tell us why you think that should be? And is this your formal recommendation to the committee?
It is my view indeed that there's absolutely no justification whatsoever. I seemingly can't see it of why you want to review something that you, in the first instance, you say, I want to comply, and I do want to compliance, and I leave others, and now on a review. It's simply just, I can't see any justification. It's really a wasteful expenditure in my view.
Do you know how many board members were present at that meeting?
How many was?
How many board members were at the meeting that agreed for the review to be instituted? Thanks.
No, I don't.
No, you're not going to answer that. Because I'll have two. You'll answer it now. Because I'll give you more than enough time.
Right.
Sorry, I won't use my 5 minutes. The first question, sir.
Sure.
As a risk practitioner, and you alluded to it, that the SABC for the foreseeable future will not make a profit. Are you saying to this committee that the concept of a going concern is a real threat to the SABC? Yes or no?
Yes, sir. Yes, Chairperson.
Thank you. Secondly, you said something about Price Waterhouse and those the procurement process. You were in the adjudication, and they were done irregularly. If that is correct, if I heard you correctly, the question that I'm asking, are you aware if those that benefited were aware that it was done irregularly? That's the question. Price Waterhouse, Seleka, or if it's not Seleka, in your view, do you think that they were aware that corners were cut when they were offered the contract? Yes or no?
I'm not aware, no. I'm not aware.
All right, the final point from my side, and then you can answer all the other questions that you might have noted. Okay. The exposure that the SABC sits with now in terms of decisions taken by a board that was not correct and continue to take. You want to make a comment on that? I'm saying there is no board. Decisions are taken. If it's proved tomorrow that those decisions are invalid, it really means that everybody could take us to town on all those decisions. What is your comment?
In all honesty, if I was there at the SABC today, I will indeed put that as number one risk today, because there's just so many contracts that many people will just go to court and say, well, how do you award? This value needs to be approved by the board.
Thank you very much. If you can then round up, I think I saved about 2 minutes. Anything else that you want to do? No. Let him respond to those first.
Yeah, there were some of the questions. The internal audit being lumped up. Sorry. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, cool. The internal audit being lumped with risk audit. I mean risk and governance. And I think Honourable Khoza raised the issue. It is indeed worrying. And I must say again, in addition to that, you cannot have forensic audit reporting to the CFO, procurement reporting to the CFO. The principle, basic principle of controls, which says segregation of duties, is for exactly that. So that in itself is worrying, and it's one of the risks. Well, it's one of the causes of what we are talking about as we speak now. So that I've dealt with, and
this matter is so important for all South Africans. What I'm going to do is I'm going to start with Mathangu and go this way. Everybody's going to have one question, but you've got 1 minute to put your question. So prioritize your question. I mean, this is a real bonus. If you don't have a question, then you leave it. Absolutely 1 minute to pose the question if you have. Otherwise, we'll cut you off, and then, sir, you'll respond to all of them
okay. Together.
All right. Mathangu.
Chair, the question that I would want to ask is the external risks that you evaluate would not include political interference.
Okay. No, you'll respond. Yes. Note them, you respond them. Okay. Honorable Mukwena.
Okay. No, I wanted to know, to the best of your recollection, if you know at what point the board started not correcting, so to speak, because I think it will help us in terms of the decisions that were made in the SABC there.
Okay.
What was the minister's role in the, what you say is the active destruction of good governance at the SABC?
Yeah.
Chair, thank you very much. I want your assessment based on risk, having worked with three different chairpersons of board. Can you just give me each assessment per chairperson in informed by your risk, you know, assessment of their performance?
Okay.
Chairperson, thank you. Just a question around the role of the company secretary. You've indicated that she's conflicted, but in general, her role vis-a-vis the board and where she did not fulfill her responsibilities.
You've got 3 minutes, sir.
Okay, good.
I'll start with Honorable Killian. It is the role of the company secretary to advise honestly the board that they don't correct if they don't. It's as simple as that. And if you're failing to do that, you literally fail in your duties. It's as simple as that. Honorable Choke, the...
Sorry, Chief, does that include the irregular removal?
Yes, it includes everything. If you can't advise... Yeah, if you can't advise the board that the founding legislation is in the pecking orders of law is much higher than the Companies Act, then I don't know what else. So it includes exactly that, Honorable Clear. Honorable Chauke, the last three chairpersons of the board, I don't know, I'll describe them, I don't know, disaster I think it is. I was very fortunate to start at SABC. The chairperson was Vincent Mapai at the time. You compare then and now, it's sad. It's absolutely sad. Yeah, that's how I'll describe it. Honorable Van Damme, I don't know what the minister's role will have been in the governance, honestly. I truly would not know. I'd never had an opportunity really to meet nor had any other discussions. Sorry about that. Honorable Mukwena, correct. Sorry, Chairperson, if you can just remind me, you talked about the correct...
At what point did the board reach a point where, in your view, it didn't correct?
Right. In my view, at the point when the three board members were actually fired or dismissed. Yes, three were dismissed, yeah. At that point, that's where I think the correct business started. Yes, the... political interference is one of the risks that are included in many of the so-called the credibility of news. I didn't go through it because there were 17 of them. I didn't mention it. However, a political interference is a main cause in the risk of news credibility. Absolutely. So I think I've met my 3 minutes, Chairperson.
All right. No. We'll degenerate into something else. So, thank you very much. Thank you very much for making yourself available. But as we say to everybody else, if between now and the date that we finalize our report, there's something that you want to bring to our attention, it's work in progress. You'll be able to do that through company secretary. So once again, thank you very much. And not the company secretary, I beg your pardon. The committee secretary, I beg your pardon. So you'll do that until we are ready. But as we say to everybody else, we also reserve the right to call you guys back to clarify when we have processed it and to add to it. But for now, sir, have a good Christmas and a prosperous New Year. Thank you very much. You may be released. In terms of members, that is the end of today's process. On Monday, we start at 9:30. And on Monday, we have a former General Manager, Labor Relations, Ms. Nkosi, who will be then followed by Mr. Mabaso, former Group Executive HR, followed by Mr. Masinga, who is a Group Executive Technology, and then at 4 o'clock we will have the SABC 8, although there's 4 of them representing the 8. So that is the program for Monday. can we also then also request, Mr. Banana, that if there are documents that members need to have in preparation, let's get those to members in good time.
Chairperson, can we perhaps just understand there was a document that was tabled, the context document that Mr. Tracy said it's not his document. Could we just have clarity where does this come from?
I don't know. Whose document is that?
No, sir, it's probably one of the witnesses, but I'll clarify it later.
Right. As of now, the document has no status. As of today's proceedings, it has no status. It doesn't have an owner. It has no status. Mr. Banaro will find out who the worth of that document is and will take a decision on that matter. Honourable members, thank you very much. That concludes the business. Have a good week.